Welcome back for the eighth module of the Office 365 SMB Administration Jumpstart. I'm Steve Hall.
Chris Oakland.
And we know that you guys may or may not have just heard that little bit of music. Sorry about that. I don't know if we had any playing at all during the break. You wanted to show something from the...
Oh, I did. So we got a lot of questions about this .local domain and how do we fix that. So one of the things we wanted to do real quick was kind of show you guys... exactly what we're talking about and how to do that. I don't think we did that in the last Jumpstart series, so we definitely want to change that UPN name or add a UPN name so that you can do one of these migrations.
So if you have a .local, how to make it a routable or how to create a routable domain name.
Right, exactly. So if we could switch to my screen and hang on, I might not be in the right mode. Bear with me a second.
So, I mean, the big thing is, you know, it's really easy to do. And he's going to show just how quickly it can be done. And the thing is, you don't have to change your entire .local to a routable domain. It's just that all the users that are going to be cloud-enabled users must have a routable domain. Ready?
All right. Hold on just a second here. And I'm still in.
All right.
I'm sorry. Hang on just a second.
You want to do it at the end, or you want to do it?
I'll have it in 2 seconds if
okay.
You get.
We have all the time. And this module, when we'll be getting into as soon as we're done with this actual demonstration, we'll be talking about the security and protection of Exchange Online. There are a lot of new security features and a lot more granular protection that we're going to go over. Yeah. You ready?
I think we're good now. All right. So I have remoted into a domain controller. This is just happens to be a Windows Server 2012, but the domain functions are the same in Active Directory domain functions are the same across all the server platforms. I'm going to, because it's Server 2012, I'm going to hit my Windows key. I'm going to go to the my Start menu, my Tiles. I'm going to hit Active Directory Domains and Trusts, okay? And don't laugh at our domain. It was created a long time ago. This is our internal domain. This goes back to probably NT4, I believe, at some point. So
you have dated yourself.
I just dated ourselves. I certainly did. So don't laugh at our domain. I'm going to right-click
on
the...
What's the name of that domain?
This is domain.eustridge.net.
All right.
That's our internal domain. This is pre.local stuff. So... And obviously, we don't want, I'm not C. Oakman at domain.eustridge.net. I'm C. Oakman at eustridge.net. So if I right-click at the very top here, and I go to Properties, all right, and right here I have Active Directory, Domains and Trust, UPN suffixes. So, for example, if I wanted to add, obviously you can see eustridge.net is in there as a UPN suffix. All right, I have not changed my domain. I just added eustridge.net. And at this point, I want to add, let's add...
123.com.
Yeah, 123.com.
Or okay. Microsoft.com.
Yeah, let's do that. Let's do Microsoft.com, because that's easy. All right, and I'm going to hit Add. All right, so now it shows up down here as another UPN suffix. So this can be useful if, let's say you've got a domain for your corporate email and maybe a domain for sales email. So... maybe we have eastridgesales.com or something like that. You could have multiples, and your users could have different default emails within Office 365.
As well as login names
as well.
You're going to go to users and computers also?
I am. So I'm going to say, okay, I've applied that. I'm going to hit my Windows key again. I'm going to go to Active Directory users and computers. I'm going to click on myself. And I'm going to see under my account... I can see that my default username is domain.eastridge.net, okay? And we do not have, at Eastridge, we don't have ADFS, we don't have DirSync running. We're just a small business using cloud only. And I see now that I have Microsoft.com as a choice here and at Eastridge.net. So if I choose Eastridge.net, I can log in as cokman@eastridge.net. I can still log in to my computer with eastridge.com/cokman. So you still have that functionality for single sign-on.
Or you
can take that out. But For single sign-on features, I have to have cOkeman at esers.net, or if I wanted to be at the one we just added, at microsoft.com. Okay? So we just want to show how easy. You don't have to change. You're not changing your whole internal domain. You are just changing how your users log in. Okay? So we just wanted to show that real quick.
And do that before you do the DirSync.
And do that, yeah.
Yep. All right, so let's now jump into the second to last module, the Exchange Online or Exchange Security and Protection. And so we've now reached the 8th out of 9 modules, 2 to go, and unfortunately our jumpstart will be ending soon.
Yeah.
So what is Exchange? What's in Exchange Security and Protection? It's basically two major components and a lot of small services that are baked into Exchange itself. What is EOP? Is it the Executive Office of the President? Equal Opportunity Program? Edge of Pavement? English Only Policy? Emergency Oxygen Pack? Edge of Panic? That may be a good one right there. Emergency Operations Plan? Ethernet Over Power? Hey, EOP, not POE. Elevation of Privilege? No, it's Exchange Online Protection. And this is, I'll get into the slide as I say it. It's actually the cloud-based email filtering service that replaces the forefront online protection for Exchange. Now, many of you may still see forefront online protection for Exchange or may still have that service. Mm-hmm. If you're doing the upgrade, at some point you will have Exchange online protection.
Right, and even if you've been upgraded a month or so ago, you could still have the old FOAP instead of the EOP. So
at some point you'll have EOP. The new tenants that are being created will have EOP. And what does it do? It filters your mail and adds a new anti-malware protection to Exchange Online. Safeguards organizations from messaging policy violations, and it protects against spam and malware. There's also the new feature, the Exchange Data Loss Prevention, or the DLP. We touched on this in two modules ago when I mentioned how you could protect users from sending sensitive information out or it coming back in, but you basically set conditions that filter email messages out or in. It's made up of transport rules, actions, and exceptions, and it must be activated in the EAC or Exchange Admin Center to filter live messages. We can inform senders that they're about to violate a policy before they send an offending message off, and we can do that using the configuration of policy tips. DLP does require an Exchange Online Plan 2 license, which is included with all 365 midsize and enterprise plans. But you must know that. So if you had just an Exchange Plan 1 or a kiosk, it would not include DLP.
Right.
So definitely know that. That's why it's bright red. What is the point of the Exchange Security and Protection? It's to stop viruses and malware and protect sensitive data. Just really drilling down into what it does. It uses multiple engines and a lot of advanced technologies to sniff out, I'd say, bad guys in this case, and it really protect the sensitive data. And I'm sorry if some of the transitions are not playing through. From my view, I don't see all the transitions necessarily.
Right.
So if I am skipping some, when you all do get the slide decks, you'll see those. It's comprehensive protection, multi-engine antivirus scanning, the continuously evolving anti-spam protection, and it's built on top of the forefront online protection for Exchange. And it's been advanced, and it's geographically load-balanced data centers. That's why it's reliable. The service is built in the same data centers that Host 365. And the administration is the same simple Exchange admin center, which you've seen throughout all of the modules thus far. In DLP, you know, what does it do? It really helps you identify, monitor, and protect sensitive data. So what is the spam control? And this is the actual within Exchange Online Protection. Connection filtering, it blocks up to 80% of spam based on IP block and allow lists. And there are sender and recipient filtering policies and content filtering, which is actually pretty strong. So combine that blocks 100%. How do we control the anti-spam? Through connection filtering, we can actually block senders from IP addresses. We can block senders from domains. We can block, and we can allow also. We can pick off blatant spam and high-confidence spam. And we can delete, quarantine, or add headers. And modify subjects and redirect messages that are flagged as spam. All right. Here we go. So we can block languages. We can block email based on language. We can block email based on geography. So if we're getting messages from some faraway place that we know is not valid, we can just block it based off of that geography. Or we can block messages that don't come in our language or don't meet certain languages that we want to work with. It's easy to filter. If we can look now, this sort of explains how the actual flow is. The filtering is done. The email flows through. Let me get my laser pointer out. And it hits the edge blocks. And as it flies through, we can actually see where the mail is picked off, where it's analyzed, where the policy is enforced, and whether it's deleted or it's put into quarantine based off of where the email is filtered and checked in the process. And our custom rules come into play. First and foremost, the edge rules apply. Then we have some virus scanning. Then our custom rules apply. Then our spam protection. What are our safe senders and recipients and some of the SPF senders and the bulk mail filtering? And what happens to the messages? Do they go into quarantine? And when they go into quarantine, what do we do with that mail? There's obviously ongoing feedback, and then eventually the messages either get delivered to our network or they get sent out or deleted. Outbound filtering. So not only do we filter messages coming in, we can filter messages going out. First and foremost, are they clean? Have they broken any policies? Are they spam messages? And do we deliver it out to a outgoing pool, or do we deliver it out going to a high risk outgoing pool, and knowing that the messages may be flagged, and then the messages are handed off. So we can analyze in and out, and we can get alerts as administrators. Hey, our internal users might be sending spam. Maybe we should check them out. Maybe something's going on with XYZ PC. And it really gives us that in-depth knowledge as to what's really going on within our organization. So it's never good to send spam out. It's terrible to bring it in, but it's just as bad to send it out. So, anti-malware, which is the second component. The basic level is built into the Exchange server itself. We also have it in the Exchange Online Protection. It uses the same antivirus engine as System Center Endpoint Protection, and it scans through the transport service. So, it's simple to configure. Why? Sender notifications are sent right here. The admin notifications are sent here. So we can simply set, okay, the sender or the recipient will get notifications, and the administrator will get notifications, or administrators. We can say block the message. Let me highlight that. We can block a message, or we can delete the attachments, or using a custom alert. Now, what does policy management look like? It's the same rule set as the transport rules for EOP, but there's some new conditions. The sender IP, we can block by sender IP, we can block by attachments. We can determine what's going on inside of that attachment. Is it an attachment that has executables that should not be there? Does it have sensitive information? And does it exceed size limitations? Also, some incident reports. We can make sure messages meet certain TLS requirements. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to actually jump right into what it actually looks like. Oh, the DLP rules, sorry. We talked about it in previous modules. I just talked about it a moment ago. We can create rules. The big thing here is we can create test DLP rules, which is really good, because if I want to make sure that Chris is not sending out credit card information,
right,
I can just apply a rule and test it versus Chris and say, okay, well, before we apply it to everybody. Or I can apply it and say, okay, what would this look like? And then we can test it and verify that it's working the way we want, and then apply it to all users.
Or certain users. Right.
Definitely. What are some of the ways we can create the DLP rules? There are certain out-of-the-box templates that are ready to go, provided by Microsoft. We can enable those, customize them slightly. We could also import a pre-built policy from outside your organization. So if you were using a different filtering or different DLP-type rules, you can import those, customize them, and import them into your Exchange or to your EOP, which is incredible because it reduces the administrative work you have to do. Or you can create your own custom policies. So let's get into the management. It's great to have talked about it, but let's see what it looks like to manage it. So I've created some slide decks here that are moderately interactive, and we're going to actually go live at the end and do demos once again. Before we get into the actual management, do we have any questions flowing through?
I got a couple for you. Yep. Let's see. How long are messages quarantined? quarantined before they get automatically deleted.
That comes down to the retention and things that we set.
Retention plans. Can we allow our users to maintain their own quarantine, good sender, bad sender? If the message has made it to the junk mail folder, then yes. they have all those capabilities.
They have all the control from there.
Yep. As well as they can log in.
Assuming we enable that.
Right.
Which
assuming
we enable. Couple of modules ago.
Right. And they can also log into the EOP console themselves and whitelist and
correct.
Blacklist and check on their quarantined messages.
Which
as
goes
well.
Back to that whole self-service admin that you can enable. The more you enable your users to do, as long as you educate them on how to do it, the better the experience can be for them or the worse. It comes down to your users knowing
right.
how they are and what kind of administrator
and how
are
much,
you.
Right. And how many permissions you want to give your users, because sometimes you don't want to give them.
You might not want to give
you
them.
You might want to not. You're exactly. So, yep.
Anything else?
Yeah, that's about it. I'll let you continue.
All right. So let's jump into what the console looks like. So obviously we have the Exchange Admin Center, which hasn't changed. It's from there we go out into Protection. And then in Protection we actually have our... In Protection, we actually have our options for EOP, for the Exchange Protection settings. From here, we can actually set up protection and manage protection for mail, selecting advanced Exchange settings, and we have the malware filter, the connection filter, the content filter, outbound spam, and quarantine. So here's where we can actually make those settings and adjust those settings and see what's there. So we are going to jump right into the DLP rules. How do I create a DLP rule? I wanted to show that throughout the slide deck, and the reason I created slides is that in case you all don't get it while I'm doing it live, you can actually have the slide decks to go through one at a time to see how was a rule created. I would definitely understand how to create rules. How to do it may be a requirement if you're trying to, you know, pass some sort of test eventually. Understanding the DLP rules and how they're managed is definitely a requirement for the 74-325.
Yep. Somebody's asked, I've been in Office 365 since October last year, and I don't recall ever getting a quarantined email. Is that expected? Yes, it is. By default, that is not set up to send your users it's
report.
Not a daily, it's a every 3-day report. You have to go into, if you were set up in October, you had to go into FOAP and actually set that up.
That would have been the forefront online protection.
The forefront online protection. You had to go in there and set it up. And if you're on the small business plan, you don't get it at all. So
just another one of those things that are lost in plan to plan.
Plan to plan, yep.
So as the EOP becomes enabled, you can actually request that that be sent to you or to your users. So let's go in and look how to create a DLP rule. And this is the data loss prevention rule. So I want to create one for credit cards, or I want to actually look at one. I actually edited that policy that's already there. I went into rules, and right here we can see you can actually either enforce it, or you can test this policy, or you can test it with or without policy tips. If you decide to enable the credit card rule without policy tips, what will happen is the message, let's say Chris here wants to send a message out that has credit card information. You've been a bad boy giving out our credit card information.
I'm trying to send them out. Yep.
You won't be notified that your message won't go out.
Right.
You won't get that policy tip. It won't tell you, hey, you're about to violate a rule, so it won't give you that ahead of time, and your message won't go anywhere.
Right.
I might get notified as an administrator, and then I'll come, hey, Chris, we have to talk. Why are you trying to give our credit card information out? That comes down to how we set these rules up, and the policy tip just notifies the user. So we can either enforce the rule or we can test the rule. All right. So back here, now that I've pressed edit, right here, I can notify an internal recipient or an external recipient. I may not want external folks to know that, you know, this email that you sent or that we're sending you is going to be blocked, but we have the option to set it to send a message to the internal people or the external recipient or sender. What does it look like to create that, to notify an external recipient about the credit card? Here's exactly what the edit of it looks like. This is the policy. And apply this rule if the recipient is located outside the organization. And it is a credit card number. I could add other conditions if I wanted to, but in this case, I just care if we're giving away a credit card number, I want it to be picked off. Do the following. Block the message. Generate the incident report and send it to the administrator and to whomever else that I want it to go to. I can put an exception in here, except if the person is Chris Oakman. He can send an email now.
Yeah.
Or if it's Visa, I don't care. But MasterCard, Amex, you know, I can probably filter down to those. I'd have to do some customization for that, however. I can set this policy with certain levels, and I can choose to enforce or test, like we just saw those. And I can activate this rule on certain dates and make it deactivate on certain dates. I can stop processing other rules, or I can just let it add on to other rules that are being processed. And I can defer the rule if I can defer the message if the rule processing does not complete or compute. So if it doesn't match, I'm not sure. Just go ahead and defer.
Yep.
All right, we're going to do the demo at the end. Do we have any questions here?
I've got one. We're on E3 plan and weren't aware of the Forefront tool. What's the URL to access that? So we'll show that.
I was about to say, we'll show that.
Yeah, we're going to show that.
Now, the question is, if you're E3 and you were on the new version of Office 365, you'll have the EOP.
Right.
And if you're an upgraded tenant, you may still be on the Forefront online protection, and you might not see the actual, logging into it might not be as easy. There is a URL for that, though.
Right.
We'll do the demo for the actual DLP rules momentarily, but I'm going to jump right into the mail flow rules now.
So I'm going to do all the demos at the end.
It just comes down to my technical ability in getting to the demos. So mail flow rules, message tracing, and delivery reports. I'm not going to go as in-depth because a lot of this is going to be covered in the compliance, I'm assuming.
Some of it will be,
all right. Well, you're going to tell me where to stop if go too deep. Exchange mail flow rules. So we've been able to do this with traditional on-premise servers for a long time, mail servers, exchange servers. You just go down to Mailflow in the Exchange Admin Center. From here, there are the rules that are already in effect. We can create new rules. This is the credit card rule, the DLP rule. There's also the do not forward rule. Message tracing. So we can enable a message trace and a delivery report to, you know, it's a really powerful thing that we can do. We can allow users to trace their messages, or we can trace messages to see what's going on. So if we don't allow our users to actually trace messages, we can do it ourselves, or we always have the ability to do it as an administrator. We can trace messages sent from one Office 365 tenant to another, and it's a simple interface to use. Everything is in that simple to use Exchange Admin Center. I mean, it's not much that can't be done there. We can actually get the results based on date, from, subject, and a summary status. Granular reporting. We're going to look at the reporting. What's available in reporting? So out of the box, there are several reports. And if we can look at this right here, we can tell the active and inactive mailboxes, the new and deleted groups, the email application summary, the mailbox size limit details, the summary, inbound mail, the mail protection. These are very general reports that are ready to go and be generated on demand. We can actually get some more information, but all of these are ready to go. Simple to click on, get a report. A lot of information that people, that users, all of us have requested is here now.
Yep.
I mean, a lot of this was available before, but it's more, and it's just easy to get to.
Absolutely.
And then the reporting demo, so we'll get to that in a moment. So I'm going to now jump into the actual live session, assuming I can do this correctly. And do we have any questions
right
now?
So we'll elaborate on this in a minute. But somebody has asked, can you please elaborate on the FOAP to EOP migration? I'll talk a little bit about that. What we're seeing is it can take quite a bit. Microsoft cannot give us a definite date as to when this migration will take place. Those of us that have been on Office 365 for a while, our tenant has been upgraded to the new version of Office 365, but we're kind of stuck in limbo on FOAP and EOP. And this is kind of a sticking point right now because we can't make any changes either. So
remember, it has to do with the transport and the mail flow.
Right.
And there's a lot of reasons it's taking its time, but we don't want to lose potential mail flow as a result. So Microsoft is definitely doing the due diligence.
To take their time and,
yep,
and make sure it's going to be right. So it stopped us on a couple migrations where we wanted to do a hybrid installation because it hasn't been configured yet. So we're kind of stuck on a couple of our clients' migrations right now, waiting on Microsoft to give us an answer. We've been on countless hours of support trying to get a good answer, and their answer is give us another month or so or a couple weeks. We wish it would happen a lot quicker because it is slowing us up, but. It's going to happen. It still is Forefront Online Protection is still filtering our email. It's still taking care of all that. We just can't make any transport rule changes, anything like that. So just bear with Microsoft on that. It's going to happen soon. Let's see what we got. The slide earlier said Exchange Plan 2 is required for DLP and part of the mid-sized business plan, but mine says I'm on Exchange Plan 1. Is that right? So if you've got Exchange Plan 1, DLP is not included.
DLP is not included. I believe. That's what the service description says.
Right. And but it is part of the bundle.
Correct.
So if you get...
The E1 plan.
The E1
plan. That includes Exchange Plan 2.
Includes, right.
No, it does. Exchange is the E3 and the, what else is Exchange Plan 2 in it? The E1 is not. The E1 has Exchange Plan
1.
We can pull the slide up.
We can pull the slide up.
You know, we can pull it up right now. Well, I'll pull that up one moment if you can answer another.
Okay.
Of course.
So we'll verify that for you.
Whatever includes Exchange Plan 2,
yeah,
we'll provide DLP. We'll get that answer and put it in the Q&A.
Are DLP rules available for on-premise version Exchange? Yes, Exchange 2013, they are.
Yes.
Yep. How long are messages quarantined before they get automatically deleted? That depends on the rules you set on your the quarantine.
All right, so I'm actually logged into the Exchange Admin Center, and we're going to actually...
Okay.
So if we can show the screen now.
Beautiful.
So I've gone down to protection. This is the demo tenant, so there's not much in here. We'll go ahead and play around and create some things. So I went to protection, and now I'm right at the malware filter screen. If
right, and the big change here from previous version with FOAP to the new version of Office 365 is it's all built into the same console.
Portal.
You don't have to go, and that was one of the questions that somebody asked was, you know, we have Exchange E3, how do we get there? Before it was a link, and it was kind of hidden in the tenant, so now it's all built right in.
So this is a new anti-malware policy that I'm creating called Sample Malware Filter Rule, or policy. And with this policy, I want to delete any malware that comes in, and delete the attachments, or delete the entire message. I could put custom text in here, but I want to notify anybody that's internal and external, and I do not care to notify any administrators. I don't want to put any custom text, but I could put a custom message in here, and I'm going to apply it to, if the recipient is part of which domain, the demo domain, actually both of our domains.
Yeah.
I'm not going to add any exceptions, so if any malware comes out, the message will be deleted. Not notifying. Oh, I got an error here. Let's see what happens here. Nothing like an error during a live demo, right?
Yeah, yeah.
All right, so apparently I'm having demos. This was an upgraded tenant, and like I mentioned before, I made the switch over to mine. You saw what the process of creating that would be.
Mm-hmm.
I have several created rules on our live tenant. The connection filter, what does that look like? So if I just wanted to create a new connection filter allowing any messages from a particular IP address, if I have a relay service or I have messages coming in from a third party, I want to make sure that anything from that IP address is allowed. I can allow them here, or I can do the same and block. So I can block based off of IP address, or allow based off of IP address. It's just as simple as allowing the IP address, entering the IP address range, and then or the IP address itself, and then enable the safe list. Content. Okay, let's see, we're having a couple of issues with this tenant. So I can create a content rule saying that if a message does X things, here goes your question. How long do I retain messages in the quarantine?
Yep.
I can set it right here.
15 days.
15, I can actually increase that. And I can create it based on content, based on different rules that I choose to create. Is it coming from a certain location, different language, and URLs. I can have a lot of criteria with which we can filter by. I'm a little bit hesitant to create a rule right now. I don't want to see that error screen again. But the same thing. Who do I want to apply it to? A particular recipient, our domain, or a person that's a member of a group?
Right.
Like I said, you can test rules right here. Outbound spam, similar to the inbound. It's just a rule versus internal users for outbound messages, what to do. Send a copy of the suspicious message to a particular user or send it to an admin. And then the quarantine. What's in quarantine? What can I do with it? I can push the message through. I can so I can release the messages that are in quarantine. There's nothing in here now. And I can edit and check out what's going on. And I can do an advanced search. There's nothing for me to search right now. Now I'm going to go down to mail flow. And hopefully we won't get any errors here. So let's look at a mail flow rule. Or I'll just edit this rule. I'm scared to create anything new right now. So this is our credit card rule that I showed in the slide deck. So notify external recipients about sending credit cards. So if the recipient is located, I can select it here. If the sender is, these are my criteria. I could say if it's a particular sender, if the, it's a particular machine, if it's an internal, external. I have a lot of granularity with what I can set about the recipient, or sorry, the sender. Similar to the recipient. I can, you know, set filter these rules based off a sender or recipient, based on the content, the subject. Does it have an attachment? What's going on with that attachment? The what's going on with the message itself? Does it contain certain criteria? The sender and recipient, and based off of relationships between the two. The certain message properties or a message header. So I have a lot of conditions with which I can set and apply a rule. Mm-hmm. Then I can say, okay, well, what is the condition that we want to filter by? Let's add a condition here. Do I want to say that the sender is a person? That could be the condition. It could be the
An attachment.
In this case, I'll just jump on a credit card because, like I said, I'm scared to make too many changes here.
Right. And somebody posted that they're getting the same errors with their demo account. I just checked the admin current health. It looks like Exchange right now is in extended recovery.
Well, the great thing about the dashboard.
Continue to monitor provisioning delays while synchronization is in process. So. They've got something going on in the dashboard or in the Exchange tenant. So,
okay, so I'm not gonna create any new rules. I'll just show how they can be created.
Yep, how they can be created and how to edit them.
And you know how to edit them. So based on the credit card number, if there's a minimum count, if there's one credit card number that's in here, we want to block that message.
Yep.
I don't care how many at max, but if there's at least one, I want to block. With the default, I mean, we're not gonna put message confidence. I could say, are you 100% certain that it's a credit card? We're just saying, hey, if we think that it's a credit card, we're gonna block that message. Do the following. Enable a policy tip. First of all, tell the user that it's going to be blocked. We can take that out, but right now we're notifying the user with the policy tip that the message is going to be blocked. And we're also going to generate an incident report and send it to the administrator. Except, well, there are no exceptions, and we're enforcing this rule. And we're going to activate it now and never deactivate it. I'm going to try to press save. We'll see this one more time.
Error.
Whatever. we're going to look at delivery reports. Delivery reports are similar to how they've been forever. If I just wanted to search Karen Berg, who I actually have turned into a few times during this jumpstart, and I want to say all the messages that she sent to, I could use internal users, or I could actually go in and type in the wrong space. I could type my email address in, my outside email user.
Oh.
And I could do a search. Are there any keywords that I'm looking for? Or I could just search for all messages ever sent. And I may or may not get valid results right now. I don't know that she sent an email to me.
Okay. Just to update everyone, because someone said they're not having any problems, some customers served from the North American region may see delay.
So I'm glad you said that. And this actually relates to that. When I was logged in as the district computers tenant, which is our live tenant, there was no degradation.
No,
but there was in the demo tenant.
Right.
I meant to actually say something about that earlier.
Yeah, and that's something when you're doing a delegated administration of a client, you may not see your tenant when you look at the support information when you're doing delegated administration, you may not see that client is actually seeing issues from Microsoft. So sometimes it is important to have your own administrative user at that client so you can log in and double check their tenant for information.
All right, and message tracing, it's similar in how we can actually set it up, and if we can look at the demo environment, we simply select who's the sender, who's the recipient, when were the messages sent, custom period, 2 days, 20, one day, 2 day, or 7 days, or we can extend that period. What is the delivery status? Was it delivered? Did it fail? Was it pending? You know, is it unknown? Is there a message ID? And then we can search for our results. Accepted domains. This just shows us our accepted domains right now. We've already verified this back in the domains. in the Office 365 admin, but we can go in and change the, what can we edit here? We can actually edit the intent, is it an authoritative domain or is it an internal relay domain? With respect to the email, obviously, because we're in Exchange. And then our connectors. We can set up inbound connectors and outbound connectors just as we've been able to with Exchange in the past. Let's. Now, we were asked questions about public folders. I know I'm jumping a little bit off subject.
That's fine. Nope. By all means.
But public folders are indeed back. We can, we can create public folders here. We have to create the data. We have to enable the public folder service.
And somebody asked earlier if public folders were just an extension of SharePoint. No, they're actually
mail. That was the question, actually.
Yeah. They're actually mailboxes inside of Exchange.
Yep. So, you know, a lot of people really want public folders. And the question was actually asked about migrations. You know, do I have to migrate a public folder into SharePoint? No, you can actually keep public folders and migrate to it directly to a public folder.
Yeah. You can flip back. I had a question, one last simple question. Why is it not easy to switch back from Outlook to the Office 365 admin, back and forth between the Outlook client and the administrator?
Oh, it is.
It is very easy. It's in the toolbar
at
the
right
top.
Now.
Yep. So if you want to take a look.
So right now I am in the I'm in the Exchange Admin Center.
Right.
And I'm going to go to my Outlook. Of course. Okay.
Yep.
So Outlook web app will be opening. I'm in my Outlook now.
Right. And hopefully it'll populate and back up at the top. And
right here in my rows. I can go straight to the Exchange. I can go to Link. I can go to SharePoint. But since we're doing Exchange,
I'll go right back
to Exchange.
Yep.
And now I'm back at the Exchange Admin Center. So if you're not seeing that, refresh your browser maybe.
You're right.
But that's all it should be. It should be just that easy. Compliance is going to be covered next. This is the DLP rules are right here, though. So since I touched on DLP, if we go to Compliance Management within the Exchange Admin Center, and now we select Data Loss Prevention. Also, retention policies are here, but that'll be covered next. Here's our real PCI rule. Of course, you saw it in the transport rules because it's the DLP. I'd set it here, and it would apply the rule all over. And I can enforce it. I can actually go into it, and you've noticed that you'll see the same. You will have seen the same rule down in the actual mail flow. And these are the same rules. It's the same. It's just I can create it in the DLP section. The rule's the same because it's the same rule. I can create rules here. I can create them back in the. It's just like I said earlier in the slide deck. The DLP is made up of transport rules and policies and actions.
Right.
All created in one policy, and with respect to the retention policies, that's all done right here as well. If you look at, I know Chris is going to get into this in the next module, but this is where the retention policies are set and the remainder of the protection and security within Exchange.
Yep.
With that, we're going to jump to questions.
Sure. Couple questions here. Yep. This is one that I wish we had. Somebody asked, is there a unified status overview that can show the status of all tenants that you admin for? That's a request we've put into Microsoft. I know I have. I know
third-party tools. third-party tools.
There are some third-party tools out there that can do that for you, but you know, for instance, you know, another Microsoft product that we use, Windows Intune, we get a quick status of all of our clients,
snapshot
view of all of our clients, but there's nothing like that in Office 365 yet, hopefully.
And the big
soon.
Thing is, even though we're looking at one tenant now, different users within this tenant will have email on different Exchange servers most likely.
Right.
And that's another thing. So looking at that view would be great, but it's the reality is different users, and it's all because it has to do with the redundancy. Different users are on different servers, so it's not one thing that would affect all users. We have a client that is one of the users actually was affected by the outage or by the degradation yesterday, but their user on the West Coast was affected, but their two users on the East Coast were not. So it really goes to say that it would be great to have a snapshot view of what's going on with all of our clients, and I would say just put that request out there and keep asking for it and asking for it and asking for it, and you never know, maybe the tool will be created.
Yep. Somebody asked, is there a DLP template for the PCI compliance rule? I don't know of any templates.
So let's go to DLP.
Let's go to new. There is one.
New policy template, because there are templates that are built in.
There are templates.
And in a moment, you will see the policies reload, assuming, here you go. So there are a lot of policies that are built in. And they pertain to various countries in this case, and there should be a credit card.
There's a credit card. I don't know if there's a PCI compliance template. There it is. You're right.
So, but there are a handful that are built in. You can also import and export some, and you can right here it says there. You can find more DLP policy templates that Microsoft partners have created. and you can export those and import those, or download those and import those into your exchange. So you can actually keep growing. We didn't talk much about the Office 365 Marketplace at all.
Right.
And I think you may have mentioned it in Module 1. But the reality is, the great thing about Office 365, or another great thing about 365, is that the services are extended by partners. And there's a great marketplace for the Office 365 services, the add-ons that can extend the functionality. And a lot of partners make great add-ons, like DLP policy templates, like Office apps that can plug into the Outlook, or Outlook web apps that can plug in Outlook, or Outlook yep. apps that plug in the Outlook web app or Outlook.
Right. Somebody asked, when you sync on-premise mailboxes to Office 365, what user type do they appear as in Office 365, contacts or mail users?
So when we sync what?
On-premise mailboxes are going to show up as a mail user.
They're going to be a mail-enabled user. You have to give them a license, or they should have a license. And if they don't have a license, because you're importing them direct, you have to give them a license, then a mailbox will appear.
Yep. Somebody says they can't see DLP in their demo account. You may have enabled a small business or medium or mid-sized business,
yeah.
a mid-sized business tenant. So it depends on the. There's two trial accounts that you can enable. There's a mid-sized business and there's a E3 enterprise that you can enable.
The E3 should have this included.
The E3 has it included. The mid-sized business does not include DLP. Okay. Let's see. Are connections to public folders limited to 10 users as well? And I think this person might be confused. It's 10 active sync users to a mailbox.
Oh, clarity on that earlier.
Clarity on that.
I did say Outlook is a Mappy connection still.
Right.
It's active sync connections. And I believe any mailbox is limited to the 10 active sync current active sync connections.
Right. And so public folders... you can have as many users as you need connecting over Mappy to those.
Let me see if I can find within Outlook. Now, this user doesn't have any. This is the demo.
Okay, doesn't have any email.
Doesn't have any. I'm going to go into the settings. Under options, so I'm logged into my OWA now as the demo user. I went to my OWA and I went to options. Under options, I have my phone right here. This is where I would see all the devices that are connected to my account. I could actually wipe the device, block the device, wipe the device, or edit the device. Yep. So I could actually remove a device from here. So they can be done by the user themselves.
Right.
And I can have SMS notifications turned on or off based on that policy that we showed in the previous episode.
Right.
Are there any more questions?
Let's see. Does message tray show hop by hop information? I don't know,
and I will answer that question. I will look it up and answer that question
for
you.
We'll look it up and answer that.
So, and I'll put that out. Any others? I mean, we've reached our 50-minute mark, and what we'll do, we'll stay online for a few minutes, and we'll answer questions. And then we'll see you in about 10 minutes for the final module for the 365 SMB Jumpstart. Thank you.
Thank you.